This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese. Patricia O'Connor writes in the third edition of her popular book, Woe Is I, The Grammarphobe's Guide to Better English in Plain English. Woe Is I is a survival guide for intelligent people who probably never have diagrammed a sentence and never will. Most of us don't know a gerund from a gerbil and don't care, but we'd like to speak and write as though we did. And the hundreds of entries in the book certainly help us do that. We'll talk to O'Connor this hour. She's better known as the Word Maven, and she'll take your calls. Language pet peeves, phrases and cliches that you especially hate. We'll talk about it all this hour. Talk of Iowa in 5 minutes following Iowa Public Radio and National Public Radio News. This is Talk of Iowa for this Friday, February 12th. I'm Dennis Reese, welcoming the Word Maven, Patricia O'Connor, back to the program. Good morning, Patricia.
Hi, how are you?
Well, I'm great. How's the weather out there in New York?
Well, actually, I'm in Connecticut, about 70 miles east of New York City, and it's nice here. Beautiful blue sky, a couple inches of snow on the ground. It's a beautiful winter day. So we aren't being hit by what's to the south of us.
Okay, Connecticut gets a break. That's
yeah,
good.
Yeah, better than us.
Well, it's nice to have you back. Of course, as we've mentioned before, you're a native Iowan.
Mm-hmm.
And your book is called Woe Is I, The Grammarphobe's Guide to Better English in Plain English. And you have I love your introduction, Patricia. You say, English is not easy as languages go. It began 1,500 years ago when the Germanic tribes, mainly Saxons, invaded Britain, a Celtic-speaking land already colonized by Latin-speaking Romans. Into this Anglo-Saxon broth went big dollops of French, Italian, Spanish, German, Danish, Portuguese, Dutch, Greek, and more Latin. Within a few hundred years, English was an extraordinarily rich stew. And you say, let's face it, English does get messy. It certainly does.
It does, but I love English. I think the messiness is part of its charm. For example, I'm not in the same corner as the people who'd like to simplify English spellings. I think our spellings, even the weird ones, they preserve the history of the words. A lot of things that we don't understand about English spellings, for instance, why there's an L in should. Mm-hmm. Or in walk, or why we have some of these weird GH sounds and GH spellings in a lot of words that aren't pronounced that way. Those reflect the way the words once sounded hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years ago. So the spellings have kind of frozen in amber the way some words once were spoken. So I think it's very interesting. I think we'd lose a lot if we made everything phonetic.
Really? So you're not recommending like a big language convention to simplify spelling?
No. It's never worked. It comes up every 10 years or so. There's a big surge of interest in simplified spellings, but it always goes away.
Okay.
And besides, we don't all speak alike. So whose phonetic spellings are you going to use? Would you want everything to sound the way people speak down south? Would you choose spelling that reflect the way people sound on the East Coast, the Midwest? That's another reason phonetic spellings wouldn't work.
Mm. You also say in your introduction, I love this, bright, educated, technologically savvy people who can program a supercomputer with their toes may say or write things like, come to lunch with a boss and I, or already housebroken, the queen brought home a new corgi. Now, mm-hmm. my question is there, what if the writer actually was talking about the queen being housebroken? You know, I mean, sorry, I had to say that.
I think she's pretty housebroken by now.
Probably talking about the corgi. We'll take your at 866-780-9100. To speak to Patricia O'Connor, author of Woe Is I, other books, As We, You Send Me, and a great website, grammarphobia.com. That's a fun website, colorful and interesting, and a great blog.
We've actually set up that website so that people can write and ask questions. about the language, and we choose a question every day and examine it. And I think today is why people have started saying mummy in the United States instead of mommy. I think that one's today's blog item, but there's a button in the website that you can click on to send us questions.
I haven't heard that, so that's actually happening. The use of mummy is coming back.
Yes,
or
that's
British,
starting,
isn't it?
It may be a British affectation. These things aren't unheard of. But I don't know if did you also get a copy of my book Origins of the Species?
No, I don't have that. I just have Always I.
It's on the way. Too bad you didn't get it in time. But that one has a chapter on a British influence on English. Mm-hmm. And one of the interesting things, and I was reminded of this just listening to the news before you came on, of that mellifluous British announcer from NPR who was just on before you were. And I was thinking about the British accent and... actually, a lot of people ask me, why do Americans no longer have their British accents?
Yeah.
When the truth is, we never had them.
Really?
What we think of as the British accent is a fairly recent development, mostly early 19th century, some late 18th, some early 19th century. The British accent really developed after the American Revolution. They used to sound...
I have to ask you, as a native Iowan, is there an Iowa...
Well, of course, I don't think there is. I think Iowans speak normal English, normal, unaccented English. But, of course, people out here in the East don't quite agree with me. But I do think the Midwestern variety of English, at least phonetically, sounds to me the least accented of all the other dialects.
Of course, the language is getting so homogenized. I mean, the speaking style, that is. I mean, if you go south and if you go south and deep into Alabama and tune in their local TV newscast, you don't hear a southern accent.
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because that's starting to change.
Hmm.
Increasingly, television and radio outlets are starting to hire people who have both regional and ethnic accents, people who sound, for instance, Hispanic or Southern. And I have read, I subscribe to a lot of linguist lists, and I do a lot of reading in scholarly journals on linguistics. And in fact, the various dialects of English are becoming more pronounced in the U.S. rather than more homogenized, despite what you would think. The regional dialects are becoming more pronounced.
Well, that's a good thing. That's a great thing.
I think
thing,
it's
yeah.
a good thing. I think it's a good thing because, after all, this is a big country. It's made up of a lot of different kinds of people, and that's always been its strength and its uniqueness, and that's also the strength and uniqueness of English, that it's a big language made up of a lot of other languages. And I think that regionalisms and different ethnic and regional ways of speaking make the language more interesting, keep it more alive. It also brings in new usages into the language that aren't there already. Street talk, for example, usages from certain industries, from technological industries, from... Well, a lot of words had their origins in farming or manufacturing, so there's one in English, a lot. We'd lose an awful lot if we had a institution like the French Academy telling us what we could put in the language and what we couldn't. Yeah. Fortunately, we don't have that.
Right. 866-780-9100, questions or comments about language, words, pet peeves, cliches, words that you love to hate, words that have popped up in the last few years that you especially love or especially hate, or email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Let's go right to call. Roy is calling in today from Rolfe, Iowa. Hi, Roy.
Hello, thanks.
Go ahead with your question.
Yes, I have a question about the proper use of is or are preceding a number, such as an example. It seems to be correct to say there is $150 in my wallet, but not correct to say there is three boys at the door, although I hear that more and more.
Yeah,
but I do hear also from apparently educated people saying there is 150,000 soldiers in Iraq. I hear that all the time. And also the use of is or are ahead of words such as a lot, like there are a lot of people over there, or there is a lot of people over there.
Right. The first example you mentioned, there is, $350 in my wallet? So you have more in your wallet than I do, Roy. But anyway, let me say that when we're speaking of dollar amounts, those are usually treated as singular.
Okay.
Like, what is the price? The price is $5. $5 is the price of this.
I sensed that, but I didn't really know, you know, the rule.
Right. Dollar amounts. Also, degrees. Say 30 degrees is awfully cold.
Yes.
Not 30 degrees are awfully cold. So there are certain things that that look plural, but we treat them as singular.
Okay.
And a lot, I think generally just even though lot is a singular noun, if we said there is a lot of kids in the class.
It sounds wrong to me.
Yeah, it's. I think you go by what lot modifies.
It's like a plural number.
Right. And the thing about there, followed by is or are, a lot of people say theirs and follow it with a singular, with a plural thing, like there's 3 quarts of milk in the refrigerator.
Yes, I hear that too.
Right, and I think that comes about because we're used to saying theirs in the subject place in the sentence.
I see.
Instead of there are, and there's no contraction for there are.
Right.
We don't say there-er.
Right, so we just use what's available.
Right, theirs. People use theirs automatically, whether what follows is singular or plural. So that's
very
the problem
good.
With that.
I have one little question. The use I see in writing of what amounts to apostrophes used in a pair, kind of replacing quotation marks.
Apostrophes in a pair?
Yes,
well,
I had them before of a word. I see it in British writing now. We'll be full of that.
If you're talking about, I see. You're talking about single quote marks.
Something that isn't literal, yeah.
Roy and Patricia, can you guys hang on there for a minute? We'll get back to you, but we need to take a break for a total of 60 seconds, and we'll be back. Talk of Iowa continues in a minute here on Iowa Public Radio. This is Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Dennis Reese talking to the word maven, Patricia O'Connor, who lives in Connecticut. She grew up in Iowa, and we were just finishing a conversation with Roy, and I did you get that double apostrophe question answered? Okay.
Well, I just wanted to say that that's a difference between British and American usage. They use single quotation marks in a lot of places where we use doubles.
Okay, well, that solves the mystery. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks a lot for that call. From Rolf, Iowa, 866-780-9100. Here's an email from Dustin. I'm curious how common it is for people to use the word ideal in place of idea. I hear people say it, and it bothers me to no end. I have a friend that is always saying, yeah, that's a good ideal. Now, I have not heard that.
Believe it or not, I have gotten a blog question on that very subject. And it seems to be not unusual. The person who emailed me about it was he said that his boss uses it. I have an ideal, or when you get ideals, let me know.
Really? Well,
and
it's certainly not correct.
Right, an ideal is a principle or a goal or that sort of thing. It's not the same as idea. An idea is a mental notion. So, right, those are things not to be confused.
Yeah. Let's go next to Karen in Cedar Rapids. Good morning, Karen.
Yes, good morning. I love your program.
Thank you.
always listen exclusively to public radio. But anyway, my question is, about 20-some years ago, I went to England, and I noticed the English would say, I go to hospital, not go to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started noticing it in national news that the Americans would stop, in some cases, drop the T-H-E. And now it's gotten down to the local around here newscasters. They will lots of times say, I will go to hospital, or I go to college, not to the college.
Uh-huh.
When the T-H-E should be in there. Are we changing how we speak?
Well, as I said before, someone else mentioned something that he had heard, and I think we do like to adopt British usages sometimes, and I think this is one of them. But in the case of the use of the articles, the or a, in front of a noun, the British and American usage is different. They also say, my son is at university,
mm-hmm.
instead of my son is at a university or the university.
And I'm starting to hear that around here in regular speech.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a borrowing from British. Another borrowing that that I'm sure all of us have heard, and I first heard it when JFK Jr.'s plane disappeared. The reports were that it had gone missing.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Yes.
And it's been in American usage ever since, and now it's quite common. You see it in those little posters people will put up on bulletin boards in the post office or the drugstore. Cat gone missing.
Mm-hmm.
Dog gone missing. So that's something that's crept into our language. But they also borrow from us.
Oh, cool. That's good. Mm-hmm. That's good to know.
Uh-huh.
Right? Yeah.
Well, it's still correct to use the T-H-E, though.
Oh, yes, yes.
Okay.
Yes. But interestingly, we have a lot of vocabulary words that are no longer used in Britain. Like
mm-hmm.
we say apartment, they say flat.
Mm-hmm.
They used to say apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Flat came into use in the 19th century, and they dropped apartment. And now apartment is considered an Americanism, although
mm-hmm.
it was once used by both British and American. The same is true of the word fall for autumn.
Mm-hmm.
The British once used both words. They dropped fall, the Anglo-Saxon word, in favor of the autumn usage, which was adopted from French, in the late 1700s,
mm-hmm.
when a craze for all things French swept Britain. Now fall is considered an Americanism because we've preserved it. We've preserved a lot of vocabulary words that we had before the Revolution. And after the Revolution, there was a split between the two branches of English. And in many cases, Americans kept both terms when both were in use, and the British dropped one.
Oh, okay.
So it's not always true that a word that you only hear here instead of Britain is an Americanism. It may be an old British usage.
And we've just preserved it.
Right, right.
Okay, Karen.
Maybe if they want their correct English, they should listen to us, huh?
Well, yeah, that's more or less what I say in my most recent book.
Oh, okay, I've got to get to your most recent book.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much.
It's thank you.
Right. The book is called Woe Is I. It's a wonderful book. Thanks for the great
right.
call, Karen.
Although the book that has the chapter about English is Origins of the Specious.
The Specious, okay.
They came out about the same time.
Okay. All right. Let's go next to Marge, who's calling from Windsor Heights. And hi, Marge.
Yes. Good morning. I don't know if this has been brought up before, but I have noticed probably for quite a while, actually, the use of the word woken instead of awakened.
Mm-hmm.
And
woken,
I don't know
yeah.
when that got started.
Well, actually, that's an old usage.
It sounds like old English.
Yes, it is old English. It's an older usage, and there's nothing incorrect about it.
Well,
we have a lot of correct ways to say we've gotten up in the morning.
Yeah,
I've awoken. They're all correct.
It still sounds a little strange, though, when you see it in print and they say, he's
right.
woken up.
Sounds a little like Swedish or something.
Yeah, right. Or like a real colloquialism or something.
Right,
yeah.
right. But there's nothing wrong with it.
If you say so, wake somebody up or awaken, because it just sounds better to me. So
Well, you know, every day that you wake up is a victory.
You
do it that way. No matter how you do it or which word you use.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Okay,
bye.
Thank you for the call, Marge, from Windsor Heights. 866-780-9100. Merle is calling from Storm Lake. Hi, Merle.
Well, good morning. Excellent show. Great topic. Love your program, Ben.
Thank you.
You bet. Say, this is like fingernails on the chalkboard to me. It seems like the screenwriters and the scriptwriters for your television programs are Hollywood screenwriters, are copywriters for television shows, don't understand how to use the words bring and take properly.
Yes.
Can you tell
us?
That's
right.
I mean, it's unbelievable. I don't mean to interrupt, but it's just simply unbelievable to me. You would think they would have to have college degrees and go through composition classes and learn how to write and learn how to speak properly before they put it on the written page. It's ridiculous. I'm going to bring that to the hospital. No, you're not going to bring that to the hospital. You're going to take that to the hospital.
I probably get more mail on the use of bring and take than any other verb. And it's been my experience that people out here in the East just can't wrap their minds around it somehow. They just don't get it. And the only people that I've come across that consistently get it right are Midwesterners.
Yeah,
and I don't know why this
is so annoying to us.
Yeah, I don't know why this is. A good friend of mine, for example, whose husband is from Pennsylvania, he's a brilliant man. He doesn't get it. My own husband is brilliant, born in New York, doesn't get it. He'll invariably say, I think I'll bring this down to the basement. It's in the way up here. I'm going to bring it down to the basement. I say, no, you're going to take it down to the basement.
Well, it's funny that you bring it up as a coastal situation, because I see it happen mostly when I get a chance to watch the soap operas with the wife in the afternoon that are placed on the East Coast, the Eastern Seaboard, okay?
Right,
and they're done,
right.
And they're shot in New York.
Yes, and the thing to remember about bring and take is it's not just whether stuff is going away from you or coming toward you. It's a matter of perspective. You have to speak of the process from the point of view of the destination. Goods.
Yes.
And see, we seem to know that instinctively. We don't even have to put that into words. It was kind of bred into us. That's the way we learned it. But you try to explain that to people out there, and it's a very difficult concept for them.
Yeah, that's too bad, because I tell you what, it's like somebody grinding their teeth when you hear it while watching network television. But hey, thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks so much for that call, Merle, from Storm Lake. We need to take a break for about 5 minutes. You know, bring and take is one of my pet peeves, Patricia, and I still mess it up like your husband. I don't know why.
Not from the Midwest.
We'll take a break and be back. Talk of Iowa continues on Iowa Public Radio. Welcome back to Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese with the Word Maven, Patricia O'Connor, author of a number of books, including her latest, now in its third edition, Woe Is I. And before we get back to the calls, Patricia, I have one question for you I just want to ask. Different newscasters will say negative or minus or below zero when reporting temperatures. So what is grammatically correct? Negative 5, minus 5, 5 below zero?
Well, they're all grammatically correct. I think the most common usage is below, say, 23 below zero or 23 below. But you can also say minus 23.
But maybe negative, not negative so much, right?
I wouldn't say negative. It's so negative. But I hesitate to bring your attention to this, Dennis, but I noticed in the weather report you used impact as a verb.
Oh.
But
yeah, you're right.
I would say that you're probably in the majority now. Have accepted that as a verb, but
right, 20 it, would have been
again,
really bad.
It always sets off my a pain deep in my molars when I hear that. But you could just say a storm will affect Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't have to say will impact Iowa.
At least I didn't say your book read, which I just hate.
I noticed something else in that NPR report that we just heard about the environmental report used the phrase off the grid, and I think that's rapidly becoming a cliche.
Yeah.
Right, because it's extended to more than just the literal meaning of off an electrical grid.
Right.
It seems to mean people are coming to use it to mean anything that's alternative.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're say you're eating off the grid, it means you're eating local or you're growing your own food.
Right.
That kind of thing. So I think that's rapidly getting Shay status off the grid.
Let's go to Rebecca, who is on the road.
Hi, guys. I'm so glad I ran into your program as I was driving across Iowa today because I'm a salesperson, and we have one thing spreading across the country I'm desperate to stop. People have started to use what should be left in a voicemail for someone you're asking to call you back as their outgoing message. Here's how it goes. Hi, this is Rebecca. I'm sorry I missed your call today, but please leave your name and number, and I'll get back to you at my earliest convenience. I think that's just rude.
I'll get back to you when I'm good and ready and when it's okay for me. That is rude. I haven't heard that before. At my earliest convenience.
It started about 3 years ago with one person that I called, and the reason I feel so strongly about it is it's happening more and more and more. Like,
oh my
other people
goodness.
Are hearing this in outgoing messages and saying, oh, that's so professional. I got to put that on my outgoing message.
No, I think what they really mean, they don't mean to be rude. What they really mean is at my earliest opportunity, as soon as I can. But what they're saying is at my earliest convenience, meaning the earliest time when it's convenient for me or when I have a minute when nothing else is going on. I think they're probably just adopting something that sounds professional bureaucraties when it's really pretty rude.
Yes, I think they actually heard it in a message I left for them, and they just liked it and adopted it for themselves. Thank you very much. I appreciate
the
platform.
Thanks, Rebecca, for the call. Here's an email from Jeff. I have been noticing the use of the word functionality on radio and TV programs in the last few years. Couldn't the speaker just use the word function?
Exactly.
I've noticed ality being tacked onto the end of other words, too.
It's true. It's true. I get mail about this, too, functionality. It seems to have replaced function in the vocabularies of pretentious people. There seems to be a feeling out there that the bigger word has to be the better word, and therefore the more impressive word, and that's not necessarily the case. There's no reason to add an unnecessary suffix onto something just to make it sound inflated.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, function is a perfectly good word.
Right. Dustin is calling from Iowa City, and welcome to the program, Dustin.
Yeah, hi, good morning. I had a question about the impact electronic communication was having on our verbal communication, such as text messaging and chat rooms and online gaming and things like that.
Mm-hmm. My feeling is a lot of people are wringing their hands and saying that all these things are going to have, they're going to send English right down the drain. It's going to be terrible. I'm not so sure. I think that we have a way of compartmentalizing things like this, and I haven't seen any indication yet that texting, that the conventions of texting are washing over into regular written English. I mean, time will tell, I suppose, but I haven't seen it yet, and I suspect that it's not going to have that big an impact.
Yeah, I've heard, I don't know if it's true or not, I've heard it secondhand, but I heard that there's was a country like New Zealand or something where they actually allow their students to, when they're writing essays in English, to use short text message slang. I don't know if that's true or not, but I just thought that was interesting.
I haven't heard that, but beware of anything that you read on discussion groups or on a lot of sites on the Internet. There's a lot of misinformation out there.
Uh-huh.
And when I get mail about a lot of this stuff and I track it down, it turns out to be not true.
Okay.
So
right, well, thank you very much.
I'm not saying that's not true, but I'd be really skeptical until I knew for sure.
Gotcha. Okay,
okay, thanks, Dustin. This is Talk of Iowa. Today, Patricia O'Connor, the word maven from Connecticut, Iowa native. Her new book, and its third edition, is What Was I? The Grammar Phobe's Guide to Better English. And let's travel next to Des Moines, and Dave is on the phone. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a couple of questions. First of all, in the market reports, I hear higher and lower from instead of higher and lower than. Is that correct?
Well, that's not the usual construction.
Yeah, every time I hear it, it grinds my molars.
They probably mean compared to the day before.
Yes, right.
The
price was higher from yesterday.
Up from yesterday or down from yesterday.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And then the other
higher
one.
Higher than, lower than.
Okay. Could we pass that along
sure.
to the market reports?
Yes.
And then the other one, I'm hearing more and more now, graduate high school, graduate college.
Right.
Is that correct?
Well, no. The standard usage is that the college graduates you, but you graduate from the college.
Okay. That was another one that I was wondering about.
Right.
Oh, thank you. You've gotten a couple of my bugbears cleared up.
So I've reinforced you, huh?
You betcha. Thanks
okay.
a lot.
Okay, bye.
I love the word bugbear. Thanks for the call, Dave. Another criticism, I think, coming up of newscasters from Jerry in Des Moines. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning. You notice that no taxes are ever raised or lowered anymore. They're always hiked, either upward or down. That's a rage.
I know.
That's from local to national. Everybody says it. It's one of those fads that gets into the newscast.
Right.
Have you heard of any mothers anymore? They're all moms.
Yeah,
she is a saint or a murderer. She's a mom.
Mm-hmm.
Impacting. I'm with you on that. It makes my teeth grind. I've been thinking that for so long. And when you mentioned functionality, I got to thinking about a lot of people who want to impress you. They don't say, I'll use it. We're going to utilize it.
Right. Utilize is another one. And also, it works with nouns, too. Signage instead of sign.
Oh, yeah.
Well, in terms of pronunciation, I grind my teeth when I hear that the criminal the accused criminal is being bailed out of jail, and he'll take the railroad car to get to the next town. In other words, AI is very hard to say. It's difficult to say rather than ELL, so you hear a lot of that. And then the word often. My daughter
mm-hmm.
says that. I don't know where she got the T, but she doesn't say soften. We
yeah.
have all these.
It's actually an acceptable pronunciation in dictionaries, often.
It is. Okay.
It's one. This is a phenomenon that it's called a pronounced spelling, or a spelling by pronunciation. That because you see a letter in a word, you think it should be pronounced.
Oh, huh.
But the pronunciation of often with the T in there is acceptable. It's not incorrect, but it was inspired by the spelling.
Well, do you expect there to be a price hike on your next book?
I have nothing to do with the prices of the books on Kindle, Amazon, or anything. You know, a lot of people lately are jumping all over authors because of what Amazon charges.
Well, anyway,
not
thanks.
The author's fault.
Thanks a lot, Jerry. Really appreciate
delighted.
The call.
Thank you.
Yeah, signage is especially heinous, isn't
yes.
it? I mean, really.
Yes.
Ooh, talking about grinding your teeth. I think.
But you said heinous correctly.
How
not many
that?
People know that. They say heinous, and it is heinous. So you got a point there.
Thank you.
You've made up for impact as a verb.
Well, that is so wonderful. Thank you. I feel so much better. I think we have a question about commas. I knew this was going to happen.
Okay.
From Jennifer, who's calling from Des Moines. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. I'm not sure if this was asked earlier or not, but I was taught growing up that for commas in a series, it's after each item and before the final conjunction and or whatever it mm-hmm. be.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm in the legal field, and there seems to be such an emphasis on, you know, cutting any discretionary, in their words, items. And I see all the time people are leaving off that final comma before the conjunction.
Mm.
I'm wondering if that's correct, if it is in fact discretionary.
I wouldn't call it discretionary, but there are some conventions that use the final serial comma and some that don't. For instance, when I worked at the New York Times, the rule was no final serial comma before the conjunction. I happen to think that it ought to be used because sometimes it's better for clarity.
I agree.
For instance, if you say, my favorite foods are rice pudding, barbecued ribs, ham and eggs. Now, do you mean the ham and eggs as a single dish, or do you mean ham, comma, and eggs? So that kind of thing. It can make a difference once in a while, and I figure if it can make a difference, it can help the reader. By all means, you should give the reader every possible benefit. So I believe in using that final serial comma.
I do, too, and I will tell them to call you the next time. Okay. I love this program.
Okay, thanks, Jennifer. What about situations, Patricia, when the accurate pronunciation is not the most commonly used, as in short-lived or mayoral, which is actually mayoral?
Right.
What do you do? Use the right one and sound like an idiot?
Well, I'll tell you, when the majority of people start pronouncing something in a non-standard way, it becomes standard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the two things that you mentioned are both in the dictionary as accepted pronunciations, alternate pronunciations. So when most people start doing something, it makes it into the dictionary and becomes acceptable. Now, a lot of people like saying short-lived, and I think it's because of the influence of the verb to live.
Mm-hmm.
They don't think of it as a short life and pronounce it as lived. It's reasonable. It wasn't a correct pronunciation to begin with, but it's reasonable. It's become adopted by most people, and now it's in the dictionary.
Mm-hmm.
But in other cases where people are mispronouncing a word that's not acceptable yet, I think what you do is just go on with what you think is right, and the rest of the world is going to go its own way. You can't do much about it.
All right. Let's go next to Dan in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. I was just noticing lately that the overuse of the word absolutely when a simple yes would suffice.
Yeah, that's absolutely is much overused. But I think it was the word du jour for a couple of years, but I think it's been replaced, in a different function, by amazing. Everything is
definitely
amazing.
Yeah.
So these words come and go. I wouldn't lose sleep over it or anything. The words come along and become fads because they have an air of novelty about them. When they will tend to slip back into the place they formerly held in people's vocabularies.
Right. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I did have a friend in high school that did substitute ideal for idea, and it drove me up a wall. Absolutely drove me up a wall.
Right. That's amazing.
So, yeah. Thank you very much.
Okay, bye.
Okay, great. Thanks, Dan. And let's see. We want to go next to Andy in Mount Air. Andy, welcome to Talk of Iowa.
Hi there. Thank you. Great topic, guys. Patricia, I have a question. How do you feel about the rampant misuse of the word irony?
Mm-hmm. Right. Irony is one of those words that I think it's unique because nothing means quite what irony means. What right. it doesn't mean is coincidence. Something that's merely coincidental shouldn't be described as ironic, or something that's merely surprising shouldn't be described as ironic. When something is ironic, it has a quality to it that it was not just unexpected, but contrary to what one would have thought would happen. There's a sort of conflict in there. I hate to see irony and ironic become used in a general way to mean surprising, coincidental, or something like that, because nothing quite means what irony means.
Right. I hear it used that way.
Right. I use an example in my book that when say a Radio Shack is held up 2 weeks in a row. That's not ironic. That's coincidental.
Yeah.
But if the most recent burglars took with them a GPS device that led the police right to them, that's ironic.
Right. Exactly.
So there's a meaning there that I think is worth preserving. Maybe a hopeless wish, but, you know, you got to hope.
Indeed. Thank you, Patricia.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you for calling, Andy. Irony is a wonderful word. We don't want to ruin it. Lou is calling from Ames, and good morning, Lou.
Good morning. I don't know what you call this construction of a sentence, and I would like to know more about it. But an example would be, the bomber blew up himself. Mm. And it's sometimes it sounds better to say it one way and sometimes the other, mm-hmm. as opposed to the bomber blew up himself or the bomber blew himself up.
Are you talking about where you put the up?
Yes, exactly. And it seems to read differently than it sounds. Examples are,
right.
I picked up this book last weekend, as opposed to I picked this book up last weekend.
Mm-hmm. Right. The up is used in a lot of verbal phrases. For instance, to blow up. It doesn't mean that those parts of the phrase always have to be together, but there are times when they should be separated and times when they should be together. Unfortunately, the most idiomatic usage of those phrases, which means the sort of accepted usage, is there often isn't a rule about it. It's just something that feels better. I wouldn't say he blew up himself. I would say he blew himself up. Because I think the last part of the verbal phrase should end the clause. The up should just be at the end. Now, if you want to say he blew up the whole village, you could say it either way. He blew the whole village up. Village. It's just a matter of what sounds better to you idiomatically. See, that's not a very good answer.
Well, I'm kind of pleased to see that you've kind of stuttered around about it a little bit because, Kat, it gets confusing. When I notice it is when someone gets carried away with it. For instance, it sounds right to me to say I went to get back the package. But
right.
I could also say I went to get the package back. But then what happens is somebody will say, I went to get the package, and then they get a whole nother sentence in there. I went to get the
right.
package that I left at Bill's last year
right.
this week back.
Right,
and then
but interestingly,
back finally appears, so so far away that you
right.
forget where it belonged. Does that make sense to you, what I'm
yeah,
saying?
Yeah, it does. It does, but here's an interesting point. If you were to substitute just a single pronoun for that whole object,
okay.
instead of he went to get the package back, he went to get it back,
okay.
You'd never say he went to get back it. You would always say he went to get it back. You'd never say he blew up it. You'd say he blew it up.
Okay.
So these are there aren't a lot of rules for the way you use verbal phrases, but one of them, I guess, would be that you, if you're using a single pronoun as the object, you wouldn't put it at the end.
So that's called a verbal phrase. There's nothing
right.
more concrete. And so, therefore,
no.
the rule is that what sounds good is the way to say it. There's no real rule, just what
right.
sounds good.
Right. But if the object is a single pronoun, I think it should go in the middle of the phrase.
Interesting. Thank you very
well,
much.
Thank
enjoyed,
you, Lou.
I enjoyed this so much.
Thank
okay.
you, Lou, for the call from Ames. Unfortunately, we're out of time. We have so many other callers. We'll have to have you back soon, Patricia. Great program. Always just a huge amount of fun for me.
I'd love to hear from the people who didn't get on.
Hmm.
Just go to my website, grammarphobia.com, and write to me.
Okay, grammarphobia.com, and write to Patricia. Thank you, Patricia. Really appreciate it.
Okay, bye. Okay,
bye-bye. Patricia O'Connor is author of Words Fail Me and Woe Is I, her book now in its third edition. Talk of Iowa production assistant today was Rosalind Sixby. I'm Dennis Reese. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.